This is Inside Wealth, the ultimate disclosure on Talk 910 KNEW. Living a healthy and happy life is about awakening the matters of your wallet, balanced by concerns of your heart. Now, Stu Zimmerman.
Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome back to Inside Wealth, where we talk about the kind of wealth that money alone can never buy. It's a joy simply to be alive, and that's what we're focusing on here. Week after week, how can we absolutely love our lives and take it to the next level? Whether it's at work, at home, with our financial well-being, with our relationships, with how we view ourselves, you know, change is in the air, whether we like it or not. And Inside Wealth is really about making sure to do our best to place our intention and attention on how to direct this change in positive ways so we really get to enjoy the glory of what's going on here, because on one level, life can be kind of hard. The money game can be really difficult. Our relationships can make you want to pull your hair out. And sometimes our physical well-being stands in the way between us and a great day. So how can we take this change for the better? Because it is inevitable. It is happening. So along those lines today, we have Eddie Erlandson, an MD, who was a vascular surgeon, hospital chief of staff, and has taken his work into something called Worth Ethic, where he uses his education and understanding of the science of stress and how the brain works into corporate America. He also wrote a great book called Alpha Male Syndrome with his wife, Kate Ludman, and he's going to discuss some of that as well. And we also have our Brain Trust member, Steve Farrell, the worldwide coordinating director of Humanities Team, a civil rights movement for the soul. He's returning again. He's built businesses in Silicon Valley, and now he's working on the biggest idea and turning it into reality. And that's the notion that we are simply one humanity. But before we get to Dr. Eddie Erlandson and Steve Farrell, you've got this week's bowl of stew. Well, if you haven't heard last week's bowl of stew, I'm going to tell you all right now that this is a bit of a cereal. Not Cocoa Puffs, hopefully. Hopefully something a little more organic and a little more natural. But the reason why it's cereal is actually the homonym version, where it's coming piecemeal week after week, because the bottom line is here, people, is that for this radio program, it will be over with the last Sunday in June, at least in this incarnation, which means we've got, what, four more shows left, including this one. So four more bowls of stew to mix it up and really take... I'm taking this as if this radio show has 1 month to live. And what would I want to offer the world in this 1 month to live? Great question for yourself, by the way. What would you want to offer the world if you had 1 month to live? And what's really clear to me is that I would like to live a life, first, that's peaceful. Just to have peace. And what I've noticed is that it's amazing and it's so simple. My breath. My breath patterns completely dictate my emotional state and probably even my physiology. In fact, from what I understand of Dr. Eddie Erlandson's work, he's going to discuss shortly how where we place our attention in certain areas of creativity, it actually... just by placing an attention and directing our thought, we actually change our physiology in the brain, let alone throughout the rest of our body. And we all know the flip side. When you start thinking about, you know, a lot of stressful thoughts and limiting beliefs and all this other stuff, we know what stress does to you, right? Hypertension, ulcers, you name it. So it works both ways. But the point I'm getting at is I've noticed that as I spend more time in the morning, before I go to sleep, and any other chance I get, just focusing on a deep, loving, caring breath, it completely shifts my attitude, my perspective, and my enjoyment of life. And that is something I'm offering up to all of you. It's amazing. It's amazing how simple it is. That simply by focusing on our breath, it can completely change our day. And I'm really inviting you, especially in those moments that would otherwise be, dare I say, stressful or filled with conflict, that if you take a deep breath first, or another breath, even if it's not so deep, but just to be aware of it. You know, it's remarkable. The more I do that, can't help but notice that it makes me wonder exactly who is doing the breathing. Is it possible that there is something greater than all of us that's doing the breathing for each of us that we don't even have to think about? Okay, we don't have to wonder, hey, is my breathing working? You know, it's on the autopilot switch. It goes up and down, and the diaphragm expands, contracts, and all of that. The lungs are going in and out. Don't even have to think about it. But when we do think about it, who is pulling the strings here? What is doing this on our behalf? You know, it really does make one wonder. And if I had a month to live, and knowing, as Steve Farrell is going to discuss in his way later on in the show, the notion of our one humanity, and I notice when I focus on that and breathe life into that, it is so peaceful for me and so joyful. And we have said before on this show, on this very show, that the greatest foundation of wealth is peace. Because wealth really is a state of mind, isn't it? I mean, if you got a bleep load full of money and we're miserable, what does that get you? You know, it gets you a lot of money. And you can pay for a lot of shrinks or a lot of, you know, massages or whatever else it is. But it doesn't change your enjoyment factor. And that really is what I would offer up with the 1 month to live. That life is certainly here for the enjoyment of it. And breathing and being aware of our breath can completely shift our realities. So we have a lot more control over our existence than we would otherwise think possible. And frankly, I am so encouraged by the nomination of Barack Obama and moving in that direction when I saw his speech the other day, where he talks about, you know, you're going to hear a lot about Republicans and Democrats in this upcoming election campaign here. There's a lot of us and them, whoever they are, whoever we are Americans first. Well, with respect to Inside Wealth and the 1 month to live, I'd like to take that one and amp it up a little bit. We are humans first. All of us, whether a man or a woman or Republican or Democrat or Jew or Christian or atheist, we are humans first. And when I focus on that, it's a wealth that money can't buy. I'm inviting you to focus on that, that we are humans first, all of us. Our guest today is Eddie Erlandson, MD. Yeah, you know, we don't normally think of Inside Wealth as being brain surgery, but we got a guy who's been a brain surgeon, among other things, a vascular surgeon for 25 years and a former hospital chief of staff, who has taken his work in science and medicine into the business world as a senior VP of Worth Ethic, where they look at the science of stress and decision-making on how the brain operates to problem-solve and create greater teamwork and innovation. And he works with his wife, Kate Ludman, and also wrote the book with her called Alpha Male Syndrome. So, Eddie, first of all, thanks so much for joining us on Inside Wealth.
Well, you're welcome, Sue. It's good to be here.
Well, before we get into all of your fascinating work on the science of our mind here, how do you define success?
Well, you know, I'm sure people have told you that is a great question, and actually one that I probably ask myself very, very frequently. I think the first answer is, for me, success success is doing what I love to do on a day-to-day basis. So that is the foundation of just doing work you love, and that incorporates the fact that my work or the work I'm doing has meaning, that it's contributing value, and in some ways it really defines what is my particular genius in the world. I suppose for a long time I defined success by what I was particularly good at, and now I define success by what I particularly love doing.
Well, I think that pretty much speaks to inside wealth and living a life of passion and meaning, and truly, there's nothing like that. I really want to get into the details, or at least a little bit, opening up your mind as you've kind of worked on other people's brains before and all of that. Can you give us a little bit of background on exactly kind of how the human brain functions and as it relates to stress and decision-making and problem-solving?
Well, that's, if I could, I probably would already have the Nobel Prize, but I certainly have been fascinated with it and have been a student of it for a long time. Obviously, we think of the brain as the source of thinking, of knowledge, of wisdom, and it is somewhat focused on that organ. However, I'd be the first to say that wisdom probably and in intellect actually exist in every cell of our body to some degree. But the brain happens to be the master organ, the director of the orchestra, so we know a little bit more about the brain. The part of the brain that I've been most interested in is what we would call the executive part of the brain. So, and I would differentiate that from the more reactive or the protective and reflex aspect of the brain. So in a very simple sense, the part of the brain that we have, all those big cauliflower-like things around the outside, what we call the cortex of the brain, represents more what human beings have, which is more the executive brain. And obviously we all know that that brain has the right brain and the left brain, which, although they're absolutely interconnected and we need both of them, they have different functions. Underneath that, or down in the center of the brain, is more that protective or reflex aspect of the brain, what we call the ones that keep us breathing regularly, our heart going, but also is more of the fight-flight aspect of our brain. What do we do when presented by things in our environment that we have to react to quickly? And it happens pretty automatically. The third area of the brain that I find most fascinating is the one that's been discovered more recently. And that's way up in the front portion, particularly on the left side of what we call the prefrontal cortex. And this is probably the highest functioning part of the brain. This is where things like awareness, sensitivity, tuning in to other people, sometimes we use the term the capacity for mindfulness, it exists up in the left prefrontal lobe of the brain. My idea of the brain is that we have more control than we think about what part of the brain are we operating in. So can we identify which part of our brain we'd like to be functioning from and get ourselves into that part of the brain? So, for example, there are times when we need to be operating in almost our crocodile brain, getting out of the way of a speeding car, taking our hand off a hot stove in a foxhole. The second part of the brain, however, is the one that I'd like to take us into. That's where we can make decisions and really think about what can we do that's most beneficial to a relationship. How can we problem solve together? What things can we do that really help us deal with the present-day circumstances?
And so, Eddie, real briefly here before we go to break, what are some of your findings here, or how can we become more conscious of using that aspect of our brain?
Well, the one is that we have to be sure that we set our intention to be conscious of it. In other words, that we sort of say, in this situation, it feels like I want to do this, would I be better or more thoughtful and more effective if I moved into this part of my brain? So a lot of times this is thinking about what greater options do I have, because the more reflexive part of our brain usually only gives us one or two options, sometimes only one. The left prefrontal cortex and the cortical functions of our brain give us many, many options. And of course, the more options we have, the better choices we can make.
Well, we have a choice to go to break right now, and you know what? We're going to take it.
Okay.
But we'll be right back with more from Dr. Eddie Erlandson right here on Inside Wealth. We'll have more Inside Wealth right here on Talk Radio 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. A business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to InsideWealth.net and sponsor radio that makes a difference. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on earth.
Imagine, you're lying in your bed stranded because you can't walk. Your friends and family go about their day, but you're left behind. You can't move without dragging your lifeless legs across the ground, stumbling every step, struggling to carry the entire weight of your body on two arms. This is reality for more than 100 million children and adults worldwide. They simply can't afford the one thing that will change everything, a wheelchair. We're the Wheelchair Foundation. We deliver hope, mobility, and freedom to impoverished people across the globe. And now you can be part of this great mission. A small gift from you can buy a brand new wheelchair and set a suffering person free. You won't believe how little it takes. Transform a life instantly. To make a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation.
Call toll free. 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.
Are you looking to help give back to the community but need great flexibility? Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation, ARF, has a flexible volunteer position tailored just for you. You can share in the triumph of helping an orphan kitten or puppy. ARF needs volunteer fosters to provide a little extra time or attention until these animals can be adopted into their forever homes. ARF will provide the food, medication, and support, and you provide the love. Check out ARF.net or call 925-256-1-ARF today.
Today, the fastest route to career success is a college degree. And today, the fastest route to your college degree is via the internet at University of Phoenix Online. Designed for working adults, University of Phoenix Online lets you earn your degree when and where you want without interrupting your job or your personal life. At University of Phoenix Online, you'll learn from industry leaders. You'll study with other motivated adults, and you'll complete real-world projects that can help you excel at your current job. Best of all, you can earn your degree in just 2 to 3 years with over 30 degree programs to choose from. Don't wait any longer to start earning your bachelor's or master's degree now. To learn more, call University of Phoenix Online at 877-286-1404. That's 877-286-1404. A better future is as close as your computer. Call today, 877-286-1404. That's 877-286-1404.
Welcome to Inside Wealth. I'm your host, Stu Zimmerman, right here on Talk Radio 910 AM, KNEW. Well, we're back, and we're here with Eddie Erlandson, MD, a former 25-year vascular surgeon, hospital chief of staff, and has taken all the science and knowledge he has on our circulatory system and on how the brain functions into the business world as Senior Vice President of Worth Ethic, where he does consultation with major corporations, as well as working with his wife and writing with his wife, Kate Ludman, on the alpha male syndrome. So before we get to alpha male, let's just kind of wind up where we kind of left off with Eddie last segment, because you mentioned this focusing on what greater options do we have, which I know that so many of us are attracted to wealth because of the options it offers us. So with that being a connector, is there any suggestion that you can give us as a practice or something so that we can tap into more options than what our otherwise crocodile or reptilian brain would offer?
Well, there is, Stu, and let me give you just one that might really get your attention and some of our listeners as well. That is the latest research that shows that what's on your mind can change your brain. That is that what our mindset is, what we have in our thinking and hold in our thinking, and actually change the structure of our brain. So you can imagine how impactful that might be. And let me give you an example. If you think about the mindset of abundance and wealth, and you believe and set the intention that you can actually create that, it is very likely that you are stimulating the very portion of your brain that creates the thinking that would allow you to successfully do that. Now, I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And of course, you can take it to many other areas as well. So what's on our mind, what we are thinking, actually can change the thickness, the contour of certain areas of our brain, and obviously certain areas of the brain that have the best, most beneficial effect are the ones that we want to make the thickest and the biggest. So that's a fascinating stimulus for me to be sure that I'm paying attention to what attitudes I have, what mindsets I have, what intentions do I create almost on a minute-to-minute basis, and not letting kind of more negative mindsets impact your brain, because they'll just shrink certain portions of it.
So, Eddie, if we really were to take this finding and drill down on it, because I know so many people out there think this whole idea of New Age thought and all of that, it's a lot of, you know, nice thoughts are airy-fairy, but it's ungrounded and has no impact on the terra firma, on the science, on the harder realities in life. And what I hear you saying, or what I may be interpreting here as some of what's really possible for our species, is that if we were to individually and hopefully even collectively focus on greater care for each other, on service to each other, on our nature, and observing the fact that this, frankly, this planet's our home, and take even more care in that regard, that we could actually cause, through our thoughts, our own physical evolution of the brain, or at least in the way it grows and changes.
Right, for the better or for the worse. So in other words, now that we have the technology of sophisticated imaging, like PET scanning and so on, and can do very exquisite measurements of various areas of the brain, and can actually show what areas of our brain are actually lighting up because they're metabolizing and using oxygen when we're thinking certain things in certain ways. This is way outside any airy-fairy psychobabble or spiritualistic kind of view of things. I'm a born skeptic as a physician and a scientist, so this has certainly convinced me that you change your mind, change your brain, and vice versa.
That's fascinating. I'm just wondering when there's going to be one of these dating services that are going to have PET scans of everybody's brain. They'll just match you up based upon your brain imprint. Oh, you've been thinking about that? You've been thinking about that? Here you go. Move on. And that way you don't have to rely on as many surveys. But yet I digress. Let's talk for a moment about how this work integrates with some of our wiring, if you will, because so many of us, you wrote this great book called Alpha Male Syndrome, and there is a bit of wiring involved. Why don't you tell us what that is, and is it also just related to males?
Well, let's take it back just a little bit. I realized that a good percentage of the patients that I was operating on, male and female, were what we call the type A personality. This was work done by a couple of cardiologists now many years ago that demonstrated that these people that were called type A's had three characteristics. They were competitive, they were impatient, and they oftentimes were aggressive. Now, it turned out that these people who were type A's also were some of our most productive members of society. They were CEOs. They led companies. They accomplished great things. So this was a combination of behavior characteristics and probably brain functions that had an upside and had a downside. I probably met my first type A not in the operating room or in my office, but in the mirror, because vascular surgeons are well known to have some of these characteristics. But what we know about this combination of behaviors is that it seemed to have an increased risk of blockage of the arteries, or what's called atherosclerosis. It also increased the risk factors like hypertension or high blood pressure, or elevation of your cholesterol, or what we call hyperlipidemia. So I got fascinated with how this impacted people's health, and could I help them change some of these behaviors, kind of turn the dial so that they had more of the positive aspects of and lessen their risk of having cardiovascular disease. So I started a program called Life Lessons, which was really a wellness and stress management program for type A's. And what I realized, succinctly stated, is that what caused sludge in blood vessels and what causes sludge in organizations that limited their productivity, their revenue growth, their happiness of employees, was actually the same problem. That this idea of the flip side of results-focused and of urgency and of push and tenacity could cause disease in your blood vessels, and it could also cause limited productivity in the organizations. And we knew that it came in several different flavors. So the overall alpha was something that we were exploring. We know the overall alpha has these three characteristics of competitiveness, impatience, and aggressiveness. But then there are four flavors of alphas. There's the alpha commander, the General MacArthur, the guy riding in on the white horse, loves to have people behind him, very charismatic. Downside, demands loyalty. If you aren't with him, you're against him. Then there's the alpha visionary. Got more new ideas in 1 hour than I have in a year, and all of them are the best, and all of them should be implemented immediately. So if he's leading an organization, he spins them with new ideas. He's got people out chasing ideas that haven't even been fleshed out enough to be executable, but he's full of lots of great ideas. Then there's the alpha strategist, smart as a whip, very analytic, connects the dots very, very quickly, thinks faster than most people, and the problem is that he probably is the smartest person in the room, and he wants everybody to know it. And then lastly, the alpha executor. This is the guy who either has or was born with, in his mind, a clipboard which says, have you done that yet? Have you done that yet? He basically, he or she sees the 50 to 150 steps that need to be done, and they want it done last, you know, a minute ago. And they keep hounding their people. So they drive projects relentlessly, but they also burn out their people, and it caused lots of despair and resentment. So this has really been a study of how the upsides can turn into the downsides, but also how can we help people who are alphas modify the downsides of their alphaness to make them even more effective, and even more importantly, how can we help people who work with alphas be even more effective in working with them? So this has been a, you know, a piece of research that Kate and I have done, and we have found particularly applicable in our day-to-day coaching of executives in a wide variety of companies and corporations. But it's also applicable to how we all live our lives, you know, whether it be in relationships or with our kids and so on.
We're here with Eddie Erlandson, MD, who has taken some incredible body of work in terms of how the brain operates, as well as how we can move through this syndrome of being the alpha male. And clearly, as you mentioned, it has a lot of upside to it in terms of productivity and getting things done and accomplishment. And it also has a lot of downside, including possibly being one of your patients there on the operating table, let alone...
Well, and don't forget, Stu, let alone with this, you know, the alpha males come in all different forms. Some of them are male and some of them are female.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So it's not just for us guys. Everybody can play this game.
Yeah, I don't think, we think alpha females maybe come in a little different flavors, but in general, this isn't exclusively a male gift or a male curse. It really covers both genders pretty well.
And Eddie, does this have, you know, doesn't this show up throughout the entire organization? It's not just for leaders?
Well, we know that in the Western world, in the corporations that we have looked in and studied, about 70% of executives above the manager level would be defined as alphas. In other words, they have this characteristic of being quite competitive. You know, it's a win-lose game for them. Very urgent and impatient, always driving people to results, often with the stick rather than the carrot. So it is a characteristic of probably Western corporations, maybe a little bit more than Asian or global corporations in general. So if you aren't one, you're probably working for one.
So what you're saying is part of this alpha syndrome is cultural to the Western culture?
Well, I think probably all cultures have their equivalent of the alpha. They probably just look different.
Okay.
The United States probably equates the alpha much more to the commander style, and I think the more Eastern cultures that we've worked with, there's much more of the strategist and style. But all they have combinations of the same ones. They're just probably in different proportions.
So how do you work with people to take the best of what Alpha has to offer, and how do you work with some of the shadow side of that?
Well, here's how we work with them. First of all, nobody makes any changes unless they have data that's compelling. So we actually spend a fair amount of time interviewing, gathering feedback confidentially and anonymously from the people who work around a certain person. You know, what do they do well? What doesn't work so well? What behavior actually has positive impact, what has negative impact, and we then collect a ton of data on what makes them effective and what could make them even more effective if they changed. With that data in hand, we sit down usually in a 4-hour session, and we say, well, here's the data. What are you committed to changing in order to be more effective? Not what are you willing to change in order to be a nicer person or a better person. This is all pretty much couched in the framework of business or personal effectiveness. And then once we get those commitments, we basically get them to use the ultimate in influence strategy, disclosure and transparency. We get them to go to their peers, go to their direct reports, go to their manager and say, here's what I do well, here's what I don't particularly do well, but I'm committed to changing. And then we'll work with them on the strategies or the skills to do that, whether they be communication skills, problem-solving skills, project management skills. The skill set is a really easy one. The hard part is the commitment.
And is that simply a matter of, frankly, of ego and checking the ego and say, you know, I'm really open to learning a few more tricks here?
Yeah, sometimes it is. But you see, what you can do is you can turn our own egos in a positive way. In other words, I might say, hey, you know, you're really great at this. I wonder what it would look like if you were equally great at this one. So you actually engage their competitiveness and their results focus to help them commit to changing things that they have just become bad habits.
You know, that's a fantastic approach. It really is. It's no wonder that you are as successful as you are, Eddie. You know, I've got one final question for you, and then we'll let you go. Our time together has been all too brief. But here it goes. What is your vision for what our world could be?
Yeah. Well, my vision of what our world could be would be a world which had ultimate curiosity and was free of judgment. So, you know, living in a relationship with my wife and partner that is free of blame, criticism, and complaining, and is also totally curious to what can I learn from you today, is a utopia that I live in that I sort of see as a vision for the world. Could we get ourselves physiologically, could we adjust our brain anatomy to live in that state of mind?
Eddie, I'm with you, buddy. Sounds like a great place to be. Thank you so much for showing up today.
You're very welcome, Stu. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW, 910 AM, San Francisco. Will,
ownership, trust, appreciation. They all work in the financial world, and they are all keys to security and wealth beyond measure. And it's all in our book, Inner Security and Infinite Wealth, subtitled Merging Self-Worth and Net Worth. Hey there, it's me, Stu Zimmerman. Come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net and order your copy today. That's insidewealth.net. We're blowing the doors wide open on Inside Wealth right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. And now it's time for our Brain Trust segment. And with us today is definitely someone whose brain you can trust. And his name is Steve Farrell, the Executive Worldwide Coordinator of Humanities Team. It's a civil rights movement for the soul, the brainchild of Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote all those great books about conversations with God. And Steve has transformed himself from simply being an entrepreneur and an amazing business guy in Silicon Valley to leading the charge here on the one thought of our oneness. And how that one thought can shift the entire planet and our entire species, for that matter. So, Steve, thank you again so much for showing up. And what do you have for us today?
Well, Stu, thank you. And it is always truly a pleasure to be with you and your program and your listeners as well. And as you know, I just returned from Buenos Aires, Argentina, where we held our Oneness Summit. This was our global event where people came in from around the world to listen and hear speakers talk about oneness and entertainers sing and dance and share their expression of oneness. And it was just a fabulous, fabulous event. And I'm still flying high, and I think I probably speak for the 500-plus people that were down there. And I can tell you a little bit about it if you'd like.
Well, please share with us, because not many of us have been to one of these events, and is it, you know, what is the experience? I mean, it's one thing to hear people talk and lecture and everything, but what is the visceral experience inside the body?
You know, it is such an amazing thing, Stu, to be there and to participate in something like this, where there was a biologist, a noted scientist, there were philosophers. There were leaders from the religious community, Jewish and Christian leaders, leaders from the spiritual community. There were spiritual activists and more. And, of course, leaders from Humanities Team presented. And it was just fascinating to hear these people speak from so many different expressions of oneness. So let me give you one little for example. The biologist that was there talked about something called hypercommunication. This is at a cellular level within the human species and life itself. So all of animals and plants, etc., communicate at a cellular level, much as our computers communicate through the internet. All through just the interconnection of life. And this speaker talked for about an hour about how this works and how not only humanity but all of life participates in our oneness. Just a fascinating talk.
And so how did people, you know, respond and feel? I mean, did you have people there who were skeptics, or is it pretty much a choir that was being somewhat preached to?
Well, in general, the people that come to these events, this was a two-day event. It was Saturday, May 24th, and Sunday, May 25th. And in general, people that buy a two-day pass are interested in this as a topic and are at least seriously exploring it in their own life. But always there are a few people that don't totally understand it and maybe are on the skeptical side, and some of the questions did come from that direction.
And so, you know, is this something that can really be said and convinced people of? Or is it simply a matter of when people are ready to understand it or have an openness or a willingness to understand it, perhaps because of their own, you know, dissatisfaction in life in one form or another, or some tragedies that have happened, that they're looking for some answers? Is this anything that can really be communicated and convinced people of? Or how does all this happen?
Well, the interesting thing is even for most of the skeptics, not all of them, but I'm going to say certainly some of them, and certainly the others that were in attendance, there was the most incredible, marvelous feeling at the end of each day, and certainly at the end of the summit on Sunday, May 25th. Just the sense that, my God, we have the most amazing invitation and opportunity here to just awaken. That's all we need to do, because, of course, we're not creating anything new. We are all one. Scientists are hypothesizing this is true even in the lab. It hasn't been proven beyond the shadow of a doubt, but this is this idea that we are all one has been around for thousands of years. And as we talk about what this planet looks like and feels like, what it feels like to embody our oneness, what relationships are like where we see the sacred and divine in each other and extend love to one another, it's just an amazing new world that we create. And so there was excitement about what our life and living can be like for us. And as we consider children and the world that they can grow up in, there was just an amazing sense of what can be and what will be, because our intention, our plan, our objective from humanity's team and all of our partners is that we will awaken the world to oneness in a generation, in this lifetime.
Whether they like it or not. I think the point that you're making here is that it's really an invitation. And two, is that it feels so good in the body. It feels so good. So, as much as it would be a wishful thought, and gee, we know that if we were all one humanity and did see that spark or element or that unique expression of the divine in each other, then necessarily it would imply that we would care for each other more and love each other more and live life less in fear or less in separation, which also implies no need for war. So we understand that intellectually. But what you're saying is, correct me if I'm wrong, when we have the experience in our body of what it feels like, and it just feels so good just to let the love and care flow from this thought of oneness.
That's what speaks for itself. That is absolutely the case, and the interesting thing is as you know, when you leave the United States or in other countries, there's the sense that the United States is so blessed by its financial wealth that they're suffering in many cases in this area of spiritual wealth. And this, of course, is the invitation and the opportunity to awaken and to know and embody who we really are, and then to experience this beauty and this joy of living as one with the divine and humanity and all of life.
Well, Steve, all I can say is you sound like you're having one rocking good time. And I got to tell you out there, I'm raising my hand. I think a lot of other people want to feel the same.
Well, thank you. And if anybody would like to explore oneness in more depth, please go to our humanitiesteam.org site. And there are all kinds of resources for personal transformation. And for people that are further along in the journey, we have spiritual activism things there as well that people can become involved with.
Steve, thank you as always for showing up. You're a great friend.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Stu. It's always just a real pleasure.
Well, now you heard from Steve Farrell, and you heard from Dr. Eddie Erlandson. And if you caught the beginning of the program, you even heard from me with our bowl of stew. You know, there is a common theme here. And the common theme is this. It does start with our intention and where we place our attention. That's going to determine our lives and frankly, our entire world. And what Steve Farrell was talking about, he was talking about an intention to awaken to a greater reality of our one humanity, to awaken to something that is greater than us all, that we are all a part of, whether we call that the unified field, God, or love itself, life itself, which can be awfully loving, oh, by the way.
when we have that intention to awaken and give it attention, we can shift our lives in amazing ways. And Eddie Erlandson, Dr. Eddie, vascular surgeon, former chief of staff, who's done a lot of work on the circulatory system and blood vessels to the brain, has indicated that science confirms that when we use consciously parts of the brain, specifically the part associated with creative decision-making, it actually changes the physiology of the brain itself, let alone how we feel in our body. So when we start to add up the pieces here, and I'll throw in my piece from the bowl of stew with this construct of the 1 month to live here, where we're a T-minus four and counting, where this is the fourth to last episode of Inside Wealth in this incarnation, where how would I want to live my life if I only had a month to live, doing so on this radio show and on this station on KNEW? It comes down to living in a world of peace is my ultimate foundation. I want to live peacefully. That's who I am. And I'm finding that as I place intention and attention on our one humanity, on the possibility, the very strong possibility that as I let go and just focus simply on my breath, which does seem to happen automatically, it allows me to really wonder when I take the time and make the time to let all this other superficial, but all the other to-dos and circumstances and context in my life, and let them go for a moment. They'll be there when I get back. And just focus on my breath. Some people would call this meditation. Some people would call it prayer. And consider that there is something greater than me, Stu Zimmerman, certainly greater than this, you know, this skin and bones and bag of chemicals that my body's made out of, that is doing the breathing. That just maybe it is that thing that is called God or unified field or life itself, but it's certainly what we all have in common. It's what we're all made of on some intangible, invisible, yet very real level, that it shifts my entire quality of life. And it enables me to love people more, and to love life more, and to love nature more, and become more aware of what is around. You know, and it's sometimes it's good, bad, and ugly. You know, I can't tell you, it's all the way I would have done it. You know, so you got to figure as they say, God works in mysterious ways. There's a lot of things that show up in the world that are awfully strange, even the way some people look, you know, and still, despite all of that, we are all made up of the same stuff. And as if I ever get the advance notice of 1 month to live, I'm certainly doing my best in this moment to play this game authentically, of having 1 month to live. And when I notice that just by focusing my intention to awaken to a greater reality, placing my attention on my breath, and noticing these little thoughts that pop up along the way that distract me, you know, that they take me out of, oh, I wonder what he's doing. I wonder what she's doing. I wonder where the next sale is coming from. I wonder what's happening, you know, with my kids. And start to see how, you know, the mind wanders. And bring it back. And bring it back to the intention to awaken to a greater reality and to a deeper truth. And I got to tell you, people, I really do believe strongly that a Barack Obama is very much tapped into this on a profound level, coming back and rising above, breathing through a lot of the conflict, breathing through a lot of the mudslinging, and staying true to it not being a matter of Democrat versus Republican. It really is a matter of being American first. And I'm inviting you all to consider to take it one step further, and that we are human first. Even above being a man or a woman, beyond being a Christian, a Jew, or an atheist, we are one humanity first. And we are all made of the same stuff, whatever that is. And as we relax into that and place more attention on that and breathe more life into that consciously and even allow the breath to happen on its own, because it's very possible that there is something breathing for all of us, or that is allowing all of our organs to function. That is a distinct possibility that cannot be unproven. What can be proven is there is this unified field as energy that we are all a part of. And as we place more attention on that and breathe more life into that, our personal life can take amazing, amazing direction. And such deep, wonderful relationship. And such an appreciation for the colors and the senses and all of that, just being inside the body. That is Inside Wealth. Until next week, invest in yourself, your passions, your purpose, and your planet.
Join us again same time next week on Talk 910 KNEW. And be sure to visit our website at insidewealth.net. Subscribe to our podcast, blog, or learn more about Inside Wealth with Stu Zimmerman. Thanks for listening. Talk 910 KNEW.
You have a business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to insidewealth.net. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on earth.